The Nile River, where gods, pharaohs, and vices blossom underneath a scorching sun. And there, floating in its dark waters, it's not a crocodile, but a seemingly innocuous flower holding power over them all. That flower is the blue lotus. Pharaohs revered it, priests considered it sacred above all, and historians speak of it fueling secret desires for the upper classes. But behind the grand pronouncements and the sacred ceremonies, what truly transpired in the shadows that was fueled by this intoxicating flower's essence? Was its power solely spiritual, or did it serve more earthly and perhaps even scandalous appetites? I'm Megan Braham, and on this episode of The History of Plants, we'll unfurl the shadowed allure of Nymphaea caerulea, a bloom that held an empire captive in its delicate and dangerous embrace. Part 1. Egyptian origins. So to understand the blue lotus, we need to go back to its native origins, talk about where it came from and how it first caught human attention. Nymphaea caerulea, also known as the much easier to say Egyptian blue water lily or blue lotus, is an ancient plant that is native to the Nile region. It thrives in warm, still waters, with its sky blue petals being a striking, gorgeous contrast to the dark depths below. Its history with humans is long, particularly deeply entwined with the ancient Egyptians. Evidence suggests that the blue lotus was known and held significance from the very dawn of the dynastic period, about 3100 BCE. Depictions on pottery shards from this era, along with its presence in early burial sites as funerary garlands and preserved specimens, illustrate the reverence this flower commanded in their society. Even the stylized flowers and leaves adorning ancient cosmetic palettes, objects used for both beauty and ritual, point to its early importance. By the Old Kingdom, mentions and symbolic associations became much more frequent. The blue lotus became a potent symbol of life, immortality, and the soul's eternal journey, representing multiple gods within the Egyptian pantheon. Primarily, it was linked to Ra, the sun god, as a symbol of creation and rebirth, with one creation myth detailing Ra's emergence from a blue lotus rising from the primordial waters. In another story, the god Osiris was killed and dismembered by his brother. His wife Isis searched far and wide for his scattered remains, and among them of particular importance was his phallus. Upon finding the phallus, which had been eaten by a fish, she placed it in a blue lotus, resurrecting it and him, leading to the conception of the god Horus. However, the most direct and consistent divine connection in the Egyptian pantheon to the blue lotus was Nefertem. Nefertem, whose name loosely translates to beautiful one who does not close, was believed to have originated as a lotus flower at the creation of the world, rising from the primal waters. As the god of healing, beauty, and fragrance, Nefertem was closely tied to the blue lotus and is often depicted as wearing it as a crown. His emergence from this primordial lotus symbolized the dawn and bringing of light and beauty into the world. Its role in the afterlife was considered equally as profound. The blue lotus is prominently mentioned in the revered papyrus of Ani, better known as the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which is a vital text that guides the deceased through the afterlife. One passage proclaims, quote, "Rise like Nefertem from the blue water lily to the nostrils of Ra, the creator and sun god, and come forth upon the horizon each day." This directly links the deceased resurrection with the emergence of the lotus and the rising sun, symbolizing hope and renewal. Also, if you think about it, the flower's native habitat offers a profound symbolism of its own. It grows in the mud and on the Nile surface, yet its leaves and petals are remarkably good at repelling water, displaying no trace of their muddy origins. This is called superhydrophobic, and the blue lotus's superhydrophobic ability is so effective it inspired the term the lotus effect. The Egyptians observed a powerful parallel between the blue lotus's daily cycle, blooming with the sun and closing at night, with the soul's journey through death and rebirth. The flower's emergence from the primordial waters served as a potent metaphor for the soul's awakening into the light. Some scholars believe its significance as a representation of the life cycle was amplified by its unique characteristic of displaying its seed pods, flowers, and buds simultaneously, offering a complete view of its life stages within a single bloom. One particularly evocative incantation within the Book of the Dead, titled Become a Lotus, uses the flower as a direct analogy for spiritual transformation. It speaks of emerging from the depths into a new existence, much like the lotus rising from the mud. According to Normandie Ellis in their book Awakening Osiris, a new translation of the Egyptian Book of the Dead, this passage goes like this, quote, "As if I had slept 1,000 years underwater, I wake up in a new season. I am the blue lotus that rises. I am the cup of dreams and memory that opens. I, the flower with 1,000 petals. At dawn, the sun rises, naked like a newborn. I open and am penetrated by the light, the slow awakening in the fire while the petals bloom. One by one, while the fingers that held the secret unfold, I abandon the past and I release the scent of flowers. I open and the light descends, filling me and passing through, each blue petal reflecting perfectly in the clear water. I am this lotus, filled with light reflected in the world. I float contented within myself, flower of 1,000 petals, a life lived 1,000 years without haste, a universe sparkling with 1,000 stars, a god living among 1,000 people. If you stood one summer morning on that shore under the brilliant sky, you would see the 1,000 petals and say that together they form the lotus. But if you lived in its heart, invisible from the outside, you would see perhaps how the ecstasy of its fragrant core gives birth to its 1,000 petals. What is beautiful is always what is itself in its essence, a certainty of being. I marvel at myself and others, things of the earth. I float among the days in peace, content. I am not part of the world. The world is all parts of me. I open myself towards the light and rise towards the gods in the scent of prayer. I do not ask for nothing beyond myself. I have all that I need. I am content in the company of God, a prayer that contains its own answer. I am the lotus. I wake up laughing." I love that. The last part of this, though, is particularly interesting in a context that is often left out of more PG-related stories of this flower. What's left unsaid speaks volumes, though, because we have ancient texts and artistic depictions that suggest a more direct interaction with the flower, hinting at properties that could alter perception and perhaps even bridge the gap between the earthly and the divine in a more immediate way, shall we say. Part 2, unlocking altered states. Before we get into the not safe for work part of this, let's talk about the profound spiritual and symbolic significance of the blue lotus in ancient Egypt, as we have seen, was deeply woven into their understanding of life, of death, and of the divine. But there is a persistent undercurrent in the historical record that suggests a more direct and perhaps even intoxicating relationship with this sacred bloom. Our clues come from both the evocative art that adorned their tombs and temples and the tantalizingly brief mentions in ancient texts. Look closely at the art from the New Kingdom era, and you'll often see the blue lotus in the company of wine. Scenes of banquets and festive gatherings feature guests holding the flowers, sometimes seemingly inhaling the fragrance with great pleasure, which some scholars have interpreted maybe as a way for partygoers to enhance the effects by directly inhaling the plant's volatile compounds. Garlands of the flower adorn their heads and necks, and perhaps most tellingly, the blue lotus is often depicted alongside wine vessels and drinking scenes. While these images don't explicitly show the infusion process, the close association strongly implies a deliberate connection between the flower and the celebratory drinks that were being given at these parties. But it's not just about kind of seeing a plant next to a jug of wine and thinking like, I wonder what that's about. There are more direct references that appear in ancient texts, though often told through slightly coded language. The Turin Papyrus, for example, mentions, quote, "sacred wines imbued with the blue lotus extract," end quote, and further hints at the blue lotus's use in some slightly salacious context. There are records of secret parties run by Egyptian elite that are straight out of Eyes Wide Shut, or I guess the other way around. Partygoers would dress as gods and conduct essentially orgies while consuming blue lotus flowers. These accounts, along with the artistic depictions we have, suggest that blue lotus may have been used to induce mild euphoria, relaxation, and altered sensory perception, potentially enhancing these social and ritualistic, for lack of a better phrase, experiences. But what was it within this seemingly delicate flower that held such power? While admittedly, there may be more secrets to unlock, we know that Nymphaea caerulea has two compounds that may be key, apomorphine and nusaphrine. despite the name being very similar to morphine, apomorphine has a different mechanism of action. It's a non-selective dopamine agonist, meaning it stimulates dopamine receptors in the brain. Quick biology lesson, dopamine is a neurotransmitter that is associated with pleasure, reward, and motor control. So this stimulation could explain the reported euphoric and mood-enhancing effects that people on Blue Lotus would have. Also, as a little science fun fact for you, apomorphine has been explored in modern medicine for conditions like Parkinson's disease and erectile dysfunction, highlighting its potent impact on the human body. The second key compound, nusepirine, is an alkaloid with a more complex profile. Research suggests it acts on various neurotransmitter receptors, including dopamine and serotonin receptors. It's been shown to have potential antipsychotic effects by blocking excessive dopamine activity, which might contribute to the sense of calm and relaxation that we see in ancient depictions. Some studies also indicate it could have anti-anxiety and even mild sedative properties. So the interplay between these two compounds could be creating this unique psychoactive experience people have associated with the Blue Lotus, a blend of euphoria and tranquility, and a gentle alteration of consciousness that may be a loose equivalent to a low-dose MDMA or even certain cannabinoids. But the story of this captivating bloom doesn't end with the secrets behind its petals and the rituals of ancient Egypt, because this sacred flower was destined to travel far beyond the banks of the Nile, leaving the land of the pharaohs and going into the great unknown. Part 3, The Wandering Bloom. The Blue Lotus, a flower that was so deeply entwined with the identity and spirituality of ancient Egypt, did not remain confined to the waters of the Nile. As the tendrils of Egyptian influence, trade, and religious beliefs stretch across the ancient world, so too did the mystique of this captivating bloom. Remarkably, clay tablets dating back to around 2000 BCE indicate the presence and cultural significance of the Blue Lotus in ancient Mesopotamia, a region encompassing modern-day Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Turkey. On these tablets, the flower was noted for its potential healing properties and found a place in traditional medicine. While its religious and spiritual significance in Mesopotamia isn't as extensively documented as it was in Egypt, its very presence at this early date speaks to its valued status and the interconnectedness of ancient cultures. Centuries later, around 6th century BCE, the Blue Lotus made its way westward to ancient Greece. Its arrival appears linked to the growing influence of Egyptian culture and the adoption of the cult of the goddess Isis. Admired for its exotic beauty and association with the powerful Egyptian deity, the Blue Lotus became part of Aziac rituals within Greece. It also became a common funerary flower, later adopted by the Romans and early Christians. Interestingly, the intoxicating lotus consumed by lotus eaters that caused them to forget their homes in Homer's Odyssey could have been, or at least inspired by, the Nymphaea caerulea. By the 1st century BCE to the 3rd century CE, the Roman Empire, having absorbed much of Greek culture and through its extensive contact with Egypt, further embraced the Blue Lotus. The worship of Isis flourished throughout the Roman world, and depictions of the flower, often associated with her temples and artifacts, have been found across the empire by archaeologists. Traveling eastward, we find a Blue Lotus becoming deeply integrated into both Hinduism and Buddhism around the first millennium BCE. However, this is Nymphaea nuchali, the Indian blue water lily, a species that's similar to, but not the same as our Blue Lotus, Nymphaea caerulea. But look, I love lotuses of all kinds, so I'm throwing it in. Known as Kamal, and specifically Nilotupala, this species symbolized purity, spiritual awakening, and enlightenment. Linked to deities like Lord Vishnu and Goddess Lakshmi, who are often depicted with lotus blossoms in Hinduism, and representing the victory of the spirit over the material world and the path to enlightenment in Buddhism, this blue water lily became a prominent motif in Indian art, literature, and spiritual practices. Also, if you're curious, traditional Indian medicine noted Nymphaea nuchali for its sedative and relaxant properties, which could be linked to different alkaloids like nymphean. The lotus in general also has a couple of salacious connotations that align more with its Egyptian cousin. In Indian traditions, the lotus was used in concoctions to increase potency and fertility, becoming a symbolic representation of the vulva. Of course, we've also got the lotus position in yoga and as a sexual position too. Further east, in Chinese culture, the lotus in general, with Nymphaea nuchali or other native blue water lilies likely being the prominent species, became a prominent symbol within Buddhism over many centuries. as one of the eight precious things in Buddhism and associated with the Pure Land of Amitabha Buddha, the lotus has held significant symbolic weight in Chinese art and spirituality for centuries, representing wisdom and knowledge. But it too had erotic connotations in China, representing sensuality and sexual potency that was so strong, there are legends of virgin women giving birth while bathing in lotus ponds or eating its blossoms. There's a fantastic song written by a Chinese military general who lived in the 2nd century, Huang Fu Song, that goes like this, quote, "Water lilies and fragrant lotus across the vast stretch of water. A young girl, exuberant and playful, picks lotus until late. Evening comes, the splashing water dampens her and her boat, making her remove her red skirt and wrap up the ducks. The boat glides, the lake shines, overflowing with autumn. With desire, she watches a young boy letting his boat drift. Impetuously across the water, she throws lotus seeds. As the news spreads and people hear of it, she is bashful for half a day." So the blue lotus and its similar cousins journeyed far from the Nile. Their beauty and symbolic weight resonated with diverse cultures across millennia. While the Egyptian reverence hinted at more than just symbolism, the interpretations and uses of these blooms varied across the ancient world. And as these delicate petals traveled through time and across continents, their story took on new layers of meaning, with a connection to the human experience evolving with each new civilization that embraced them. So what then became of this flower that was once so central to the spiritual and perhaps even sensory delights of the ancient Egyptians? Did its journey fade into the mists of history, like silphium, or was it destined for a later reemergence, also maybe like silphium? Part 4, the living metaphor. You know, it's kind of funny that the Egyptian symbolism of the blue lotus, death and rebirth, became essentially a metaphor for its journey through our history and its relationship with humans. The vibrant presence of the blue lotus and its similar cousins across the ancient world seems to have faded from the forefront of cultural practices. In Egypt, its specific psychoactive uses receded with evolving religious landscapes. In the Roman Empire, its association with Egyptian deities led to its decline with the rise of Christianity. And in the East, while Nymphaea Nuptiale retained its spiritual significance, its psychoactive properties were understood and utilized differently. And while the reverence of Nymphaea Caerulea and its potential for altering consciousness seems to have faded into the sands of time, the blue lotus wasn't done yet. For centuries, the blue lotus remained largely a botanical curiosity in the West. However, the 20th century brought a renewed interest in ethnobotany, leading to a rediscovery of its intriguing past. This rediscovery fueled a modern market for blue lotus products. Today, you can find blue lotus teas, tinctures, incense, and even extracts marketed for their purported relaxing, mood-enhancing, or mildly psychoactive effects. It's often promoted as a natural alternative for stress relief and a potential sleep enhancer. However, big however, you should know that you may not be purchasing the true Nymphaea caerulea, and the effects and safety of these alternative species require further scientific investigation. A recent study by researchers at UC Berkeley investigated the authenticity of blue lotus products sold online. Their findings suggest that much of what is commercially available may be a different non-psychoactive species of water lily, often visually similar but lacking the specific chemical profile of true Nymphaea caerulea. The study found significantly lower levels of nusoefrin, one of the alkaloids thought to contribute to its psychoactive effects, in online samples as compared to verified authentic Egyptian blue lotus. It's also worth noting that the legal status and regulation of blue lotus products can vary significantly depending on the region. As for the genuine, real-deal Nymphaea caerulea, well, its fate is a little more precarious. Due to significant environmental changes, particularly the construction of the Aswan Dam, which dramatically altered its native wetlands, this once-abundant flower has sadly become endangered in its homeland and has largely disappeared from the Nile Delta. So, from the sacred waters of the Nile to the global marketplace, the blue lotus has journeyed through millennia, its story a testament to the enduring power of symbolism and the human quest for connection, whether to the divine, to pleasure, or to simply a sense of well-being. As we navigate its modern resurgence, which is admittedly shadowed by questions of authenticity and conservation, we're reminded that the true depths of this ancient plume may still lie beneath the surface, waiting to be rediscovered. I'm Megan Brehm. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Jump into the commentary episode on Patreon or check out the video version on my YouTube channel, Plantrums. Until next time, greenies, stay curious and don't forget to flourish.